Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-Day CRE Challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Hi, guys. This is Ishai Breslauer, the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate on all levels. And today we have a very special guest, Daniel Benedict from the BRG Realty Group, Benedict Realty Group. And they're doing a lot of very, very interesting stuff. And you guys want to tune in because today is Monday. And Mondays, we dive deep into the market and we try to see what's going on in the market and what's coming up and what are the ins and outs, et cetera, et cetera. And without further ado, hi, Danny, how are you? Pleasure to have you on the show.
I'm well. Good morning. Happy Martin Luther King Day.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And very special. How are you?
And well, thank you. Thank you, Ishai, for hosting this show.
No problem. No problem. My pleasure. So first of all, you know what? We know each other for quite a while. What I want to ask you is, before we start anything, if you could tell everybody how it all started for you, where you came from, and how you started this business, how you got into commercial real estate.
So I've been in commercial multifamily real estate in New York City for 35 years. Started with a family business and started my own. And it's been a very interesting ride, a fascinating one. I think it started diversifying the last 10 years in different areas of real estate. And but multifamily is still the majority of what we do, although we're no longer concentrating only in New York and buying in different states, buying commercial properties and office buildings and with a emphasis on medical office buildings. And some other assets, but all related to real estate.
And tell me something, how it all started for you way back 35 years ago. How did you get into what you woke up one morning and you said, that's what I want to do. I want to do multifamily investing.
Yeah, I had a family opportunity to go into a business, and that's how you usually start when you're in your 20s. And now 35 years later, I'm still there.
Thank God. Tell me something. We went through a lot of stuff lately. A lot of things are going on. If you could tell me a little bit about, you know, the pre-COVID, how you view business, how you saw multifamily and investing in multifamily, and how investors saw it, and how your company saw it, and post-COVID. What can you tell us about this?
The difference, there is no difference between pre-COVID and post-COVID. Everybody needs a roof over their head. And as real estate investors, we have to find the proper investment opportunity and manage the properties in a way that we are making sure that under the circumstances, we provide the best, really the best environment for our residents and for our tenants to live there in a clean environment and in a safe environment. The only difference really is that some of our tenants are having difficulties or challenging times there to pay the rent, as we all know, the unemployment numbers have gone up. And this is really the only difference. This is an economic crisis. It's a medical crisis, of course, but the effect on real estate is really the economic crisis. And we are all understanding that it's a deep crisis and it needs help from the government, and hopefully there's going to be some solution, because if I look at our arrears from tenants which are having trouble because they are either lost their jobs or have reduced income, if you look at the cumulative amount in New York and in the United States, it's in the many, many, many billions of dollars, and it can really mushroom into bankruptcies eventually and bank failures.
Tell me something. In terms of, you know, everybody's speaking about, you know, multifamily, how resilient asset class it is comparing to the other asset classes. And you are, and you know other asset classes because you're involved in a bunch of stuff. Can you tell us a little bit about it? What is, meaning the difference between what you experienced and how resilient multifamily has proven itself comparing to the others?
Yeah, so you know, multifamily is not a catch-all name. You have so many various areas of multifamily investments.
Right.
I think that the truth and the emphasis has to be on, my emphasis is really on understanding that multifamily is really a roof over your head. I mean, it's so obvious that this is the reason it's resilient. Not, there's nothing magical about it. It's just everybody has to live somewhere. However, we see certain markets are suffering from enormous vacancies. Manhattan, certain areas of Brooklyn are now dealing with 30 and 40% vacancies in buildings. And so it really depends on what class of the multifamily asset you're talking about. Luxury, condominium sales, rentals, middle market, workforce housing, every area is differently. Everybody still needs a place to live. We don't know what's going to be with office occupancy, although there are various opinions as to what's going to be, and are people going to go back, or are they going to keep Zooming, or how long it's going to take. Medical occupancy is strong, although our hospitals and other medical providers have been stressed financially. You know, their main source of income is really elective surgeries, which have stopped for a while and are now reduced at a very reduced rate. And this is their main source of income. So the stress is felt everywhere and in every asset quality, but the resiliency is because of necessity.
Right. Everybody needs a roof under, right?
And you can't travel, you don't stay in a hotel in Memphis, but you know, you still need to sleep at night.
Right, exactly. Tell me something. Now you started speaking about like the different asset classes, right? And you have, and you start speaking about, for example, Manhattan, Brooklyn, et cetera, 30% vacancies. Let's talk a little bit about the differences, because when you say asset classes, right, you have the asset classes that are more like the A class in Manhattan, in Brooklyn, and all those, you know, top areas like prime locations that, you know, the cities, as we call them.
Yeah.
And then you have the A class that are suburban. Can you tell us a little bit about, from your experience, the differences between those and how they are experiencing, you know, this pandemic, et cetera?
This definitely, we've all read about the flight from the urban areas into neighborhoods where you can let the kids run around on the grass and not play between two parked cars in a concrete jungle. I think that the main beneficiaries of COVID have been the single family homes in the neighboring areas to major cities, where people have moved out of the two bedroom apartment with their one child or two children and tried to buy a house or rent a house with a garden, a pool, whatever, and this is what it's not really the multifamily. It's not as much a multifamily, although some of it, the multifamily, I would say in the adjacent area has benefited versus the inner cities. It's really the single family homes which have gotten the most bang for their buck and have increased tremendously in value.
It's amazing how single family homes are really. The whole thing got back into fashion after everybody was talking about going back into the cities.
Yeah.
And tell me something. When we talk about different asset classes, talking about your business for a second, what is your business model when you look at things? What are you guys are looking for? What is your core business when it comes
I think that when I got into the business and before, real estate was an investment. It was a long-term investment. It was not a business. It was not something you jump in and make tons of fees and IRR. The world didn't exist.
Right.
Figure out that you're buying value and you hope to get a decent return. As long as you made more money than you made in the bank, you were happy and you bought an asset which you anticipated would increase in value. It was a multi-generational business. It was a multi-generational investment. It was not something that you buy today, get your money out in 3 years, and that didn't exist. And I don't think that this is sustainable. And we, at least at BRG, never fell into that that trap. Sure, there are better and worse opportunities. But
So what you were saying is that you kept in the game of the long term, of the core. Maybe correct. Core plus. Right.
Yeah.
I got it.
That's correct.
Interesting.
That's correct. So I think that the business model of buying and, you know, financing out in 2 or 3 years has been stressed tremendously in some of the inner cities for a political reasons, political headwinds, and also from business point of view. Lenders are not as there is an ebb and flow with the lenders. You first the local lenders, then the agencies are providing enormous amount of financing and cheap financing, but you can't rely on that long term. And I think that you have to always keep in mind that as long as you look at an investment as a long term investment, solid investment, something which is there to, as I said, to be there for the next generation, you're okay.
Right, but you have to keep your hand on the pulse to see what's going and where the market is going. So having said all that, where is the market going now? What do you think? Especially in New York, in the New York area.
This is, I forgot to bring my crystal ball, but I think that I think that two things. One, it's going to get worse before it gets better. If it gets better, and it's going to take a while. New York City, as you know, the luxury end is overbuilt. Right now, there's still more people living in the city than coming into the city. And with the fact that for years already, New York City's employment drivers were not the banks, and they were not the investment banks and insurance company. The employment drivers were high tech, and they're very movable. These guys can be in and out and move to cheaper cities, and people work out of there. You know, people moving to apartments. I remember when I used to rent an apartment, people came to movie truck and moved their dresses and their beds and their couches and they had furniture. Now people moving with a mattress and an iPad, and everybody is a lot more mobile. And the first question is about Wi-Fi. So I think that New York City's got real challenges, and it's going to take a long time for it to come back.
Interesting. Tell me something. Now we see all the trends, right? The moving, we're talking about this. Where are the locations? You're probably looking at that. Different locations. You, as you said, you invested in New York City, you invested in the New York area, and now you started going out. Where's the out? Where do you think is the out place that every investor, everyone who's looking out, should look at?
I think that every investor should look for areas where they feel welcome, in areas which are where the government policies and the politics are welcoming to people which want to develop growth in the area, want to bring more jobs, more businesses. We see right now that the states with the least personal tax or and personal income tax are the one benefiting from this movement, and that's going to continue. So you want to go and you want to invest in places where there's population growth. It's as simple as that. And people now want to move to better weather and lower taxes. And as the crisis has been and continues to plague the nation, taxes in these states, which are saddled with very high costs, and unions, which are forcing ever increasing costs and pension liabilities, are going to have no choice but to continue to raise taxes, and eventually, I think, go bankrupt, because you're going to drive more and more of the higher earners out, and they pay vast majority of the taxes. And everybody knows that. I'm not saying anything that's brilliant. But as far as investment, you go to states which welcome you, which want to encourage you to come and to invest and other people to bring their factories there and their businesses there and employ people and are pro-growth.
Tell me something. As per operating the business, as per operating the management side of things, how are you experiencing it in terms of, you know, your people who are managing sites and their mobility, their ability to go around? How are you guys?
That's fine. You adapt, you change, you put your, you know, you do what you have to do. You put your signs up, you put your, you know, you make sure everybody wears a mask, and then, you know, life continues.
Right. Tell me something. Now that you know, we have this whole situation, you have an operation to run. In terms of the office, how do you guys do it? Everything in you know, everything by Zoom, some by the office. How do you guys handle it? You know,
we are in the office. We are physically in the office, most of our staff, and all of the outside meetings are by Zoom, like you and I.
Right. Then what is your philosophy about this? Because, you know, everybody, you said it yourself also.
Have a philosophy. I do what I have to do. You know, we don't have a choice. This is not from philosophy. None of us predicted COVID and the China virus, and it came and it hit us, and we need to deal with it. This is not something that I have a philosophy on. You know, you do the best and you try to protect your residents and your employees. And some of them had test positive and quarantined and stayed home, and that's what we did.
You do what you got to do.
Do what you got to do is our philosophy. That's right.
Exactly. Tell me something. Now that we're getting into this whole thing, that you know, the new world, right? We have a new administration, and I don't like to talk a lot of politics, but you know, everybody's talking about a lot of changes that might happen. Can you tell us a little bit about your take on it? Meaning, not the political. I'm talking about the practical, in terms of the, you know, tax changes that might come about. You know, the 1031 exchange that is sort of in the air. What are your thoughts about this?
Look, the inauguration is tomorrow, and Biden is going to come up with his plan, and we'll see what it is. We know it's going to have higher taxes. And we know there's going to be some help for the states. And what the details of tax and the new tax plan is, I don't know. You know, you adapt. Like I said before, we adapt our strategy. And we live in a world. We don't live in a vacuum. And we see what happens. And we adapt to the new realities. I think that the Trump tax plan was very, very pro-growth. But a democratic controlled government is going to want to do philosophically something different, and we'll deal with it.
You've been there 35 years. You saw the ups and downs and differences of administrations and laws and this and that and whatever. I want to get back to something else that we've experienced. You know, everybody was talking about it before COVID was, you know, became in fashion to, you know,
BC. Speak about it.
The regulations, the rent, you know, the rent regulations, this whole thing that came upon us, everyone who is dealing in the New York area. What can you tell us about this, the adoption of it, you know, being after a year plus after this whole thing? Where are we going with this?
It's exactly future? Where we're going. We're going in a direction where, like I said before, it's going to get worse before it gets better. They're going to try and do additional laws and additional, and they're going to continue to do so much more until it's going to implode, and they're going to go too far, and the whole thing's going to collapse, and the courts are going to rule that this is illegal. I strongly believe that. You know, you can't. We do not live in Russia or in Venezuela. We live in America, and there is a respect for private property. And we'll see how things fall into place. I'm not here to, you know, I'm not here on your interview to predict the future. I can tell you the only certainty I have is that it's going to get worse before it gets better, but it will get better.
Interesting. Tell me something, going back a little bit to medical offices.
And I just want to point out something before we leave that subject, that the real people which have been hurt are the exact people that the politicians thought they're helping. These are the contractors and the painters and the kitchen manufacturers and the elevator installers and the boiler, you know, all of these guys, which are the workforce of New York City, lost their jobs. The amount of apartment renovation work has gone down by 92% or 93%. You only do, you know, that's thousands and thousands and thousands of workers, of employees, which lost their position, lost their jobs, and don't have other jobs. So, you know, yes, you know, for every 10 owners that they punished, they hurt 10,000 workers. But that's, you know, this is when the ideological pressure is so one-sided that they can't see the bigger picture.
And tell me something, going back a little bit to medical offices, this whole thing, this is something that, how long are you in this, you got into this business?
Oh, medical offices. Almost 10 years.
Almost 10 years. And we understand, meaning the resilience of that and so on and so forth, but we understand also that during the pandemic, they were suffering because, as you also mentioned, and this is known, from certain type of activities they could not have done, meaning certain type of surgeries, et cetera.
Yeah.
Where are they now? Where are they now with this? And how are lenders treating them, you know, et cetera?
Yeah, I think that hospitals are still considered credit tenants. And there is a look, American population is aging. And as you know, you and I are in different age groups, but you know, as I used to say, my kids go to a doctor if they have a cold. I go once a year for a checkup, and you know, my mother goes four times a week because it's almost a social event. Right. So as we age, we are using the medical community, medical system a lot more. Really, the increase is exponential. And as we age, and as America is age, and as medicine has prolonged life, there's going to be more and more and more demand for medical services and medical providers.
But where do you cut the line between? Because hospital is one thing, right? And then you have medical offices of different sorts. How can you differentiate between them?
Most of our tenants in medical office buildings are hospital systems. They've been purchasing they've been so growth oriented. They've been buying a lot of the medical practices. The days of your doctor's office in the corner with a doctor and a nurse and a receptionist, they're almost over. Those are now larger and larger groups owned eventually by either regional or national medical providers or hospital chains.
Amazing, whole different world there.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Let's go back for a second for multifamily. And I know you wanted to cut this show a little shorter than I used to. I want to talk a little bit about the difference between the A class, the B class, and the C class, okay? Especially now. And that's without looking at the future. That's looking at the now, at the strategies right now. When I'm looking at a C class property, working class, what should I look in terms of the ups, the downs, the pros, the cons versus, you know, the A class, especially nowadays?
Okay, I'd like not to refer to them ABC. I'd like to, I think what's accepted now is workforce housing, and that's a housing provided to people which are in a certain, have the ability of paying a certain amount of rent. And like in every area of real estate, multifamily, you have to provide, like I said, safe, clean, and well-serviced properties. There are a lot of, you know, this is in the area of the workforce housing, there are a lot of properties out there which have been neglected, which have been owned by the developer or somebody who bought it from the developer in the 60s, 70s, and never put a penny back in there. and you walk into and you walk some of these buildings, and you know, the refrigerators is from the 50s, and this is an area where there is an opportunity to improve A, the quality of life for the residents, and eventually the value of the real estate. So this is where a lot is going on. Most of the construction going on today in most of the countries is not workforce housing, right? You can't build a building and rent a two-bedroom for $850.
Right, 100%.
So there's not a lot. So the challenge, and it's an enormous challenge, is to take those millions and millions of units nationwide and invest and rehabilitate them and still keep the rent affordable.
Right.
As to luxury, luxury is luxury. It's a completely different market. And
different animal.
It's a different animal. It's a different, you can be charging $20,000 a month rent, and if the market becomes soft, you go down to $12,000 and give 4 months free because you're trying to get somebody in there. A $750 apartment, you're going to keep charging $750 because, you can't find
it. It doesn't go any lower, yeah.
Exactly.
It doesn't go any lower.
Just different business.
Totally different business. Tell me something about retail a little bit, and I know you know a little bit about that. What can you tell us? Meaning, retail got a real hit, meaning during this pandemic. Some people say up to 70% in terms of revenues went, meaning less 70%. So, where's this going? Especially in the country that we know that there's oversupply of retail.
Issue. America was over-retailed a long time ago.
Right.
3.5 times higher amount of square foot retail than Europe.
Right. Nothing to do with the pandemic. Right.
Right. And between that it was overbuilt to begin with, and the internet economy.
Right. And e-commerce. COVID. Right.
Yeah. And COVID, I think that you take the three, and it's a structural hit, which cannot be just glossed over and say, oh, it's going to get better. There are going to be an enormous amount of, all we read about is more chains shutting stores every day, thousands and thousands and thousands of stores, millions of square feet. And, every business, retail, banks, who walks into a branch anymore? Just you name it. And the ultimate credit tenant was a Walgreens. But you walk into a Walgreens, everybody's ordering that stuff on Amazon or whatever on another e-commerce site. So they're going to be, I guess the only bright spot will be distribution.
Right, distribution is good. Right, distribution and once restaurants, when it get back, when everybody gets back, that will be. But right now they're also getting hit right and left, of course.
Look, hotels are obviously hurt tremendously. That will come back. When people can travel, they will want to travel. There's going to be enormous amount of pent-up demand to go mm-hmm. out to Broadway, to a restaurant, to the hotel, to travel, to get, but not to go to the store.
Right. Also, hotels, meaning just, to give, I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with Mike Marshall from Marshall Hotels, and he said something very interesting. He said there's also obviously a difference between locations, meaning obviously New York City is not getting back. He said that there are certain hotels in New York, a good amount, that are not coming back. And that's also another thing that, this pandemic basically brought. I want to ask you something a little bit different before we part, before we say goodbye, everything about lenders. I want to speak about lenders. How is it working? How was it working with lenders, and how did they change their strategy right now, meaning currently going into any deal, whatever you're getting into?
So the underwriting is certainly more cognizant of the fact that we're in the middle of a crisis. And the loan to values are lower, and the cash flow requirement are higher. Banks are not in the business to lend money and not get it back. So they every deal needs more equity right now. I think that it depends. I mean, really, again, in which area of the business. Are you buying a mall in Oshkosh or are you buying an apartment building on Park Avenue? They are, I mentioned earlier in our discussion that the agency lenders have been flooding the market with cheap money. So I think it's too early to tell. There's also the fact that the government has and the regulators have issued certain financial I would say directives to the lender to allow them to defer payments of principal and interest, right, and not having to affect their income. So we're still smack in the middle, and I think that question we'll have to talk about in 6 months or in a year.
Right. A lot of people say it. A lot of people say, let's wait and see what, you know, what we'll bring later, what the world will bring us and the whole financial market. Right. Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, interest rates are like so low.
I apologize. They are very low. They continue to be very low. And for the foreseeable future, if you listen to the minutes from the Federal Reserve Bank, they seem that it's going to continue to be very low. However, none of us know, it can bump for any reason. Inflation starts coming up and they are forced to raise rates earlier than they thought. Now they're talking 2-3 years of very low rates, but with trillions and trillions being printed, who knows what it's going to do to inflation? We don't know. We are in super uncharted territories right now.
And that I have an interesting question for you, because a lot of people are talking about this and I hear a lot of opinions. When you talk about inflation, how does that affect multifamily from your side? Meaning, what's your point of view on that?
In general, inflation is beneficial for assets and detrimental to cash, right? By definition, that's what it is. I think too much inflation is not good. Too little is a deflation is not good. You need a little bit of inflation. You need in order to continue and to allow the economy to continue growing. What that balance, listen, this is the ultimate challenge. We've been following the Federal Reserve Bank for the last 30 years. This is the ultimate balancing act. How do we keep the economy from going into in too strong an inflationary pressure and make sure they don't go into deflationary pressure, which is worse than inflation? So this is really I think that right now, look, from the perspective of the printing of money, well, if you take all accepted economic really accepted economic norms, the inflation should have come back already, roaring back. But one of the main segments of inflation is salaries. And with so many people out of jobs, the pressure on salaries has weakened. And there's no longer, you know, it's more beneficial for somebody to stay home, collect unemployment, get all the extra money that the government gives them, than to go to work. So there is no salary pressure on inflation. But how the monetary policy is going to affect inflation is something remains to be seen and watch very carefully. This is the ultimate challenge for the federal bankers.
Danny, thank you so much. I don't want to take more of your time, and I appreciate your time so far. Really been an interesting conversation and hearing your take. So you want to tell everybody how they could find you, your company, in terms of your guys' activity. I know you guys have groups, of investors, et cetera. You want to tell everybody a little bit about where they can find you.
Very easy.
By the way, I have the link if everyone is listening. I hear a bunch of comments here on the LinkedIn. I put the link of BRG Realty in the links and you can find it there. Please tell us.
Yeah, brgny.com is our website, and you can contact us through there. My email is db@brgny.com. And I look forward to get some feedback and criticism and disagreement with what I said. Looking forward to it. Yishai, thank you for what you're doing. And I did started following your YouTube channel.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. For sure, for sure. All right. I'm going to let you go, as we say. I'm going to continue a few couple of things that I want to tell everybody. But I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for your time. And keep in touch, for sure, 100%.
Thank you. Will do.
Thank you.
Okay.
Take care of yourself.
Bye.
All right, guys, I thank Danny Benedict. I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation with BRG Realty. It's really an interesting conversation. And I'm going to have it on the podcast soon enough. I take the audio and I rip and I put it in. I hope you guys enjoyed it. A couple of things. First of all, in terms of finding out more about this company, you have the links. If you're watching YouTube, you have the links. If you're watching LinkedIn, you have the links. If you're actually watching Facebook, you have the links. And also, in the podcast, you have the links in the text. You can find out more about BRG Realty. Another thing, if you are more of a beginner, you have to listen to me very carefully. I have the new 7-day CRE challenge, 7-day CRE challenge, commercial real estate challenge. And the first day of the 7-day CRE challenge is free. If you want to understand more, something, get clarity about commercial real estate, understand a little better, what is this thing and where this thing is going and where are you going with this? It is unbelievable, and you should take advantage of it. Okay, guys? So one thing I want to ask you, please like, subscribe, 100%, subscribe, do whatever you need to do. Give 5 stars if you're listening to the podcast. Do whatever you need to do in order to support this. And you guys, all I do is wish you a beautiful, splendid, amazing week and successful one. Take care of yourselves. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye Show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.